Christian greetings to each of you that have gathered here this evening. It's good to be with you here again. Seems like it wasn't that long that we were here, I believe on a Sunday morning several weeks ago. Appreciated the devotional Brother Vincent shared. And isn't it comforting to be in the presence of that Lord? Even though there's many years that have gone by, it gives me comfort to know that God is still here and God didn't change in the meantime, and that he's looking forward to a relationship like that. And from his perspective, he wants that relationship from me and he wants it from you. And I don't think the dispensational changes there should make a difference as far as how we view our friendship in relation with God. Although, like our brother shared, we all want a relationship like that. And possibly there are differences, but that's not our subject this evening necessarily, because we have Jesus Christ, and we're thankful, and I greet you in his name this evening. And we have a subject before us. The title is Obedience Without Conviction, and a brother from the congregation here contacted me and had requested, gave me some options, and I picked the one, and I said I preached a message similar to that before, and this was the title I preached before, and he gave me liberty to re-preach this. So, and I think maybe it was very similar. Obedience without conviction. What is obedience? Obedience is an order, it's compliance with an order, request, or law, and it involves submission to another's authority. And I believe this subject gives me some apprehension, and I don't know why, and it frustrates me. For some reason, we have an obedience problem. I think you're obedient, and I try to be obedient, but somehow this subject of obedience, it doesn't ring well with popular culture. But we're separate from popular culture, so this is something though that is a linchpin. It's a foundation stone of Bible believing Christians. So we should not be uncomfortable with it. So I will take back my apology if that's what it sounded like to you. It's under assault today. And we need to stand strong and understand obedience. You take it out of a structure, you take it out of a society, institution, committee, or organization. You take obedience, you take compliance out of that, and it crumbles, and you're left with pieces, and then the effort goes to put the pieces back together, and that can be a frustration when something is taken apart that was put together. It's always hard to get it like it was originally. And we think of churchianity today, we think of church life. And some time ago, I don't know how many years ago, I'd done some research, and I found this again. It's old, but it could be 5 years old. I'm not sure. Maybe I don't think it's more than that. But this on churchianity, every year more than 4,000 churches close their doors, compared to just over 1,000 new church starts. Every year, more than 4,000 close in comparison to over 1,000 new churches. Every year, 2.7 million church members fall into inactivity. Half of all the churches in the U.S. did not add any new members to their ranks in the last 2 years. And this is all prior to this past year, which is an anomaly, and I understand that. Well, why are churches decreasing? Why are they leaving other than death, obviously. Why are people not coming to church? And if you research that, and there's other reasons. Okay, the pandemic, obviously, abuse in the church, that has an effect. Scandals, profiteering, all those kind of things have its effect. Other than those things, what keeps coming up again and again is boredom. Which makes sense when you think of the great push in the last, 20, 30 years for entertainment, pushing entertainment in. It was to get rid of the boredom. Now, why are people bored at church? I don't know. I wonder if it's because they're not expected to commit to anything. You just come as you are. We understand that principle, come as you are. But there's something that's expected of you here. And this is what happens here is a microcosm of what happens, supposed to be happening during the week as you go about your life. And it's all together. And what we expect here is what we expect at home and in your job. And that requires work. It requires something. And if you'd make the decision to be a part of this, then you're committed. You're committed to obey. And I wonder if that is what is missing. Churches do a misservice when they do not provide opportunities for obedience. Now, what are we focusing on tonight? Obedience without conviction. We say obedience is important, but the answer to the obedience problem is not robotic obedience. It's not blind obedience. And in other words, we're not just looking for a confirmation on the outside, and then as long as you follow A, B, C, D, and E, that's all we're asking. That would be robotic or blind obedience. That's not the answer. Okay, number two, what is conviction? Conviction is a strong persuasion or belief. A strong belief that is not likely to change, or the strong feeling that your beliefs are right. Obedience without conviction. Conviction. And I think we've done fairly well at teaching the need for conviction. And personal conviction, and we need that. That's like an anchor. It's like an anchor to our souls. It keeps, if every person in a group has a conviction about something, and that conviction lines up with everyone in the congregation or in the group, it's powerful, very powerful. And that's what we want, but we're not quite there. So we have this thing called. So let's answer that. What is obedience without conviction? What is obedience without conviction? It is expected, an expectation to comply with an order, request, or law, even if you do not have a strong belief that it's necessary. An expectation to comply, even if you think it's not necessary, you personally. Now, I don't know where your mind is going, but I want to talk broadly tonight. I'm not specifically talking about. I want to talk about it's generally in relation to church life, home life, personal life, and public life. But I'm not talking about being obedient to orders contrary to God's word. I'm bringing it from the context of we're in a church setting that's safe, and also it's not in the context of having to disobey government decrees because they're trampling on what the scripture tells us to do. In other words, I'm not getting in tonight to some of the things that we're facing in the last year. And maybe that's what you were hoping for tonight. But I'm not going to go there because I know there's differing opinions on those things. And I don't think that is directly relational to the subject. I want to look at this subject in relation mostly to our homes, our churches, our schools, as we relate to one another. But even if it would come to the point where our obedience to the scriptures means that we need to disobey the ruling authorities out there or in here because of the setting that God forbid would happen, even this, we still need to be obedient to the cause of Christ and the faithful church. We don't want to be known as a rebellious people. I will quickly say that the Anabaptists in history were known by society as rebellious people because they would not fit in with society. So that there is that aspect of it. And that's what brought the persecution. I might have said that here before, I don't remember, but the persecution came because of the great conflict that came because these people were not conforming to society, to the government pressures, because the governmental system was different, somewhat different there than back then than what it was now. But we find, obedience without conviction is to obey even when I do not feel like it or it doesn't feel right. And we find this in our churches. I do not need to obey this because I don't have a conviction for it. That comes. Or in our homes or churches, we tend to allow some disobedience until the individual gets a vision and a zeal for following Christ in everyday life. And so we kind of excuse, we give a lot of grace, we give a lot of, and we do need to do that. But is that sometimes are we allowing disobedience? Or when is that? Well, that's a question we can't answer here tonight, but it's one of the things that we do well to think about. One of the reasons this distinction between conviction and obedience is being misunderstood is because of the prevalence in our society of the man is basically good doctrine. So if I am basically usually good or right, why do I need to obey someone else's convictions? It makes sense to me. So why do I need to listen to you? My personal conviction is right. Why do you question it? What gives you the right to do that? That's where we're going tonight. Obedience without conviction, there's a philosophical term for this. It's called heteronomous obedience. And this is it means the abdication of my autonomy and the acceptance of a foreign will or judgment in place of my own. That means I will let go my own thinking. I will freely let that go, and I will, in place of that, bring someone else's in and let that affect me. Now, what is the basis for heteronomous obedience, or why do we promote obedience without conviction? Well, it's because of our love for God and His Word, for truth, because we know God is asking this of us. We desire to be in His will. We realize that within ourselves, we don't have the answer. So it really relates to, this whole subject relates to how I view myself and whether I have the answers or whether the answers is found in here or in here. It's not safe. I myself alone am not safe. At times, God will ask things of us that do not make sense in our minds. But after we obey, the sense comes. Conviction often follows obedience. Now, that brings me to another question. What is obedience with conviction? Okay, well, the subject is obedience without conviction. What is obedience with conviction? Well, this is good. This is what we want. But when we get to this point, it's not an issue anymore. This is obedience by default. And what I mean by this is called autonomous obedience. It's one of affirmation. If you honestly, firmly believe something, you're going to find yourself doing it. Obedience with conviction. You have obedience coupled with conviction. That's powerful. I mean, you don't have to. For instance, when you were driving here tonight and you came up to a sign that was like about this size or whatever it is, and octagonal shape maybe, and it was red and it had four letters on it, you knew what to do. You didn't even have to search in your mind whether you really wanted to obey that or not, because you knew the consequences of not obeying it. That is obedience with conviction. That's not really a struggle. You have the conviction, and it's purpose and it's right, and you firmly believe it, you're going to obey it. If we truly, really are saved this evening and become servants of God, it will bring forth obedience and conviction, but sometimes obedience must lead the way. If we really, truly are saved and believe and we are become servants of God, it will bring forth obedience and conviction. But they don't always quite go hand in hand. And sometimes the obedience, we call, we must submit and obey, and the conviction follows. To expect that the conviction always leads brings us into trouble. Why do we have a struggle with this? That's my next question. These points are arranged in questions. Why do we struggle with heteronymous obedience? Why do we struggle with obedience without conviction? Well, we are a feeling-oriented people. We like to do things that feel right. To do something that feels right, I don't need to give you much encouragement because it comes naturally. But true biblical obedience or submission does not always feel quite right. Also, we have independence issues. The more independent-minded we are, the more this concept is a struggle. And I think we have a lot of independence issues. And that's sometimes, a sociologist would say that it's inherent in the Germanic background that we have. But I think it's more than that. I think we have, I'm getting off the subject now. Another thing, why do we struggle with heteronymous obedience? It's sometimes we struggle with this because we're trying to live with a dual allegiance. We try, it's not possible, but we try to have two masters at the helm of our life. Jesus said we cannot serve God and mammon. No man can serve two masters. You can turn to Romans 6. I did not turn to any scriptures yet. We'd like to look at this point, see what the scriptures have to say about this. Romans 6 is... I'd like to start at verse 13. Well, read verse 13 and then go later in the chapter, pick out some more verses. Neither yield ye your members as instruments of unrighteousness unto sin, but yield yourselves unto God as those that are alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness unto God. Turn the page over to... or whatever it is, drop down to, well, let's start at verse 15. Actually, we only skipped verse 14. We should have just kept on. For sin shall not have dominion over you, for you are not under the law, but under grace. What then? Shall we sin because we are not under the law, but under grace? God forbid. Know ye not, this is really what I wanted here. Know ye not that to whom ye yield yourselves servants to obey, his servants ye are to whom ye obey, whether of sin unto death or of obedience unto righteousness. But God be thanked that ye were the servants of sin, but ye have obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine which was delivered unto you. Being then made free from sin, ye became the servants of righteousness. I speak after the manner of men because of the infirmity of your flesh, for as ye have yielded your members servants to uncleanness and to iniquity, even so now yield your members servants to righteousness unto holiness. For when ye were the servants of sin, you were free from righteousness. This what it's saying here is You were either yielded tonight as servants to sin, or we are become servants to righteousness or obedience. And if you remember the Sunday school lesson this morning, it started out with the idea of Paul, a servant, a prisoner of the Lord. A prisoner of the Lord. Now, maybe he was referring there to the jail that he was in. But I think it was more than that. He he was saying he was a servant of Jesus Christ. He was a servant to righteousness. He was a servant to obedience. Know ye not that to whom ye yield yourselves servants to obey, his servants ye are to whom ye obey, whether of sin unto death or of obedience unto righteousness. And when we try to live with that, without fully committing to be servants of righteousness, servants of obedience, it brings a conflict into our lives, and we don't get anywhere. Actually, we get lost. That's what happens. Also, possibly we are a backslider in heart. Proverbs 14:14, the backslider in heart should be filled with his own ways. Maybe we were following the scriptures and were eager to obey because our lives were on fire for Jesus Christ, but there's a coolness we're cooling off and we're starting to backslide, and so we don't, it brings friction and the brotherhood asks this of us and that of us, and we just can't, it just doesn't make sense anymore, and it just doesn't feel good. We gotta get out of here. And that's what happens because of these obedience issues. But we lose the conviction, and then we don't want to obey anymore. So we become a backslider, an unconverted heart. Maybe we never did want God's way. Another reason we struggle with heteronymous obedience or obedience without conviction is failures at teaching obedience in the home. And this, I suppose, is a worthy of subject addressed separately. Home is where a child learns that boundaries and structure put in place by parents must be obeyed or there are consequences. And I want to encourage you parents in that. If you make a rule, you make it very clearly, and then you have an expectation that it's followed out and obeyed, and if it's not, there's consequences. Just that simple formula will save you much grief later. Very clear in laying out what it is, and then you expect that it's followed out, and when it's not, there's some kind of consequence to the disobedience. But I know it's hard. I know it's hard, but that brings structure, and it puts a foundation into that young person's heart that they will appreciate as they go through life. Bible examples of obedience without conviction. Turn to Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11 is known as the faith chapter. It could also be known as the obedience chapter, because if you try to take obedience out and leave faith in, you have nothing left. You just imagine these men of faith, but they had faith, but they never were obedient. They would not be mentioned here. And let's start with Noah. That we could read that in Genesis 6 through 7. But verse 7 says that by faith Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. Now I know obedience is not mentioned there, but he moved with fear. He prepared an ark. He condemned the world. He became heir. Those are all active. Those are all actions. Those are all acts of obedience. Now, imagine the pressure of Noah and his family. And his family was the only righteous family. And we can imagine the pressure of Lot and what he faced, being the only righteous family as well, a smaller group than this. And we're told, or we understand, that it did not rain before this time. And so all these things that God was saying, do you think Noah had a personal conviction for all those things that God was asking him to do? Or do you think that maybe he realized that this was, that he had to trust God, that God knew what he was talking about, and that he better do it, even if it didn't make sense to him, even if it was, even if he did not have the conviction for it? And I think it was because of his relationship with God, because I believe he walked and talked with God like Abraham did. Well, we can move to Abraham, drop down to verse 8. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for inheritance, obeyed. And he went out, not knowing whither he went. Where did this conviction come from? Verse 17, by faith Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac, and he that received the promises offered up his only begotten son. Was this conviction? Did Abraham have the conviction that his son needed to die? No, he didn't have it, because he was, well, you remember the account. I'm sure that Abraham did not have the conviction that his son needed to die, but he did have the conviction that he needed to obey God. Turn to 2 Kings chapter 5, a familiar account in the Old Testament of someone that was obedient almost by default. 2 Kings 5. We're not going to read this whole story. This is the account of Naaman the leper. Breaking into the story, we know how this was. He came with the expectation that he was going to be healed. He had the conviction, if you will, that he was going to come to this man of God, and this man of God was going to do some grand and glorious thing. He was going to bring down, I don't know what. I don't know what he thought. But what he did, what the prophet said was not what he thought. And verse 10, Elisha sent a messenger unto him, saying, go wash in Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean. But Naaman was wroth and went away and said, behold, I thought he will surely come out to me and stand and call in the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper. It does say pretty much what he was expecting there. Verse 12, are not Abana and Parpar rivers of Damascus better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean? So he turned and went away in a rage. And his servants came near and spake unto him and said, my father, if the prophet had bid thee do some great thing, wouldest thou not have done it? How much rather then when he saith unto thee, wash and be clean? Then went he down and dipped himself 7 times in Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God, and his flesh came out again like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. What cleansed him? Was it his conviction? Was it his original conviction that the waters in Damascus and Syria would be better suited for his cleansing? That's what his conviction was, but that's not what cleansed him. What cleansed him was his obedience. Sometimes we say it has to be more complicated than just obeying, or maybe we don't say that. We think that just to obey is too simple. It's not intellectual enough. But simple obedience here without conviction brought healing to a deadly disease. Simple obedience by faith to God's commands to his people today brings salvation and peace and cleansing and security. We could talk about the widow of Zarephath in 1 Kings 17, where she was told to gather, to make a cake and make it for him first. All the resources that she had, she was to put into a cake for someone else first, which meant there'd be no last meal for her and her son, and they would die. But That was a conviction, but she chose to listen and obey the word of the Lord through Elijah. Jesus Christ. This is a difficult one. Did Jesus struggle with obedience? In Matthew 26:39, the account of the Garden of Gethsemane, and he went a little further and fell on his face and prayed, saying, "Oh, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt." And we see that struggle with obedience. I guess we can say that. Because it says in Philippians 2:8, it says, "And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross." Hebrews 5:8, "Though he were a son," capital S son, "yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered." It seems like Jesus Christ also struggled with obedience. Now, I don't know. That sounds doesn't sound right for me to say that. But I believe somehow with God, with Jesus being as a man and identifying with our nature so that he could be the perfect high priest, I believe there was that. I believe even Jesus felt that struggle. Jesus understands our struggle with obedience. And he learned it. And we can learn it too. How to be truly obedient. Next point. And these are not arranged possibly in order that they should be. How to be truly obedient. Number one is faith. Live by faith, not by sight. One of the fallacies of modern Christianity is the thought that if I totally commit and immerse myself in the love of Christ, that somehow I don't need to make choices, conscious choices, to be obedient. And it somehow becomes automatic. That if I'm on fire enough for God, that somehow everything else is automatic. And that's not correct. Jesus said, "Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them. So the hearing, the word is preached, and it builds conviction. But conviction doesn't do anything until obedience comes in and helps to move it across the finish line. Perseverance, number two, how to be truly obedient. Perseverance. When obedience is practiced repetitively in the absence of conviction, conviction will grow. And I think you maybe remember our parents telling us this. You may not understand it now, but someday you'll understand. And you young people here tonight, maybe your parents told you that today or yesterday. Maybe you don't understand now, but someday you will. And that's what that is saying is practice obedience and someday the conviction will follow. I remember some of that myself in my young years, the courage to greet with a holy kiss. It just didn't seem natural, and that's okay. And I'm sure that most of you young people here tonight have struggled with that. And that's okay. That's okay to struggle, but just continue on. Continue to be obedient, and the conviction will follow. And then when you're in a situation where, because of sickness, your congregation feels like it's, like maybe, I'm not sure what your standard here is, but I think you might be cautious, and that's all right, but you feel it missing, and it doesn't seem quite right. You're anxious to get back to doing it again, and maybe that wasn't a good example. But you can fill in the blank of other things. Maybe the plain suit is just a little hard. And those are external things in a way. But there's all kinds of things in the Bible that the scriptures call us to: purity of mind and heart. That it's so easy to compromise. But if we obey, the conviction will follow. Number three, call disobedience what it is. Call it sin. Romans 1:30, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, evil, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents. And there's a verse in 2 Timothy as well where talking about the signs of the end times. Perilous times shall come, for men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents. Call disobedience what it is. Call it sin. Number five, be respectful. I missed number four. We need to practice obedience within the brotherhood. I think that's one of how to be truly obedient. Obey my brother in the Lord. And am I willing to obey my brother even when it interferes with my personal conviction? And that's really the only way for brotherhoods to work. If we practice heteronomous obedience. Obedience without conviction. There's times when I need to submit myself. I need to obey my brother, obey what the brotherhood is calling and asking for, even if I don't see it that way. And that's a beautiful thing. And I want to put out the challenge to do that, and for you to continue to do that. I'm sure you are. I'm sure you are. 1 Peter 5:5. Yea, all of you, be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility. Number five is be respectful. Respect and obedience go hand in hand. It's hard to have one without another. Authority figures who demand obedience but are not respectful and considerate when exercising that authority lose credibility and influence. To be disobedient when you try to force obedience, well, it's a train wreck. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. That's not the gospel way. Number six, love it. Love it. Submission comes easy when you love it. Obedience comes easy when you love your church, when you love the Lord. That should be mentioned first. When you love the Lord, it's easy to be obedient to Him. When you love the church, it's easy to be obedient. When you love your spouse, it's easy to be obedient to her and be at peace with her. When you love your boss and you love your job, it's easy to put your heart into it. Let's not let our love die out. I think this is key. In closing, love the Lord. Serve Him with all your heart, and you will find conviction growing out of your obedience to Him.